Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Plant the Spear podcast. I'm your host, Jesse, and I'd like to welcome you to the show. On today's episode, we got a lot to get to. Normally, during the off-season, the news cycle is relatively slow. However, this week, it's been pretty busy. You had a lot in recruiting going on. There's just been, if you've been on Florida State Twitter or around Twitter, you know that it's been like a pull the pitchforks out, put them away, and pull them out and put them away. It's just been a roller coaster in recruiting this week. So we have a lot to cover with that. Got a few house cleaning things I'd like to address at the end, just to kind of give you some heads up of some things we got coming. And then we'll talk some conference realignment thoughts, and then we'll get out of here. So obviously, the elephant in the room, the big news that happened yesterday, depending on whenever you listen to this, was the decommitment of four-star quarterback commit Chris Parson. He's been committed to Florida State for almost a year now, and he did put out on social media yesterday that he was going to reopen his recruitment. He put out a graphic on social media. I'll just read it to you real quick just for context so you can kind of know where he stands. He put out, "Florida State has been my favorite school since I was a little kid. I spent a lot of time imagining myself wearing the uniform, but the reality of needing to be in the best place that suits me for my college career has led me to look elsewhere. I wish Coach Norvell and the Seminoles the best going forward, but I am decommitting from Florida State and reopening my recruitment." Just a nice, clean, simple, kind of classy way to just wrap it up. Say your message, say your piece, put it out there, move on. And I think that's kind of what we as fans should do as well. Obviously, we're going to talk about it, we're going to discuss it, but I don't want to be like some people where as soon as a kid decommits, you come out and start trashing them. That's not fair to the kid. That's not the right thing to do. You know, a lot of people will start just shouting, "Oh, we didn't need him anyway," or "He wasn't that good," you know, right after he decommits, of course. Make no mistake about it, Parson was still a good quarterback. He was still a four-star dual threat that this staff wanted, and they would have loved to have kept him in the class as another quarterback, but they wanted to, and that was what most believe led up to the decommitment. Now, I'm not going to speculate exactly what happened there. A lot of people thought that he wanted to be the only quarterback in the class, and he had made them aware of that, and Norvell and them had made him aware that they wanted to take more than one. And so I think that just kind of caused things to just not go down well. Obviously, if you read the tea leaves recently, a lot of people thought this was coming, you know, after he removed Florida State stuff from his social media after another quarterback officially visited, and then he started posting about official visits he was taking elsewhere, which he had not really previously done. But then to make it even more confusing, he took another visit to Florida State recently, reaffirmed his commitment, and everything seemed to be smoothed over, but apparently not. Take for this what you will. I'm not sure what led into it. Again, I don't want to speculate, but Florida State also happened to receive multiple predictions or crystal balls, whatever you want to call it, to land four-star quarterback Brock Glenn in the class of 2023. The next day, Parson decommits. Of course, I'm not going to sit here and say that a kid is scared of competition. I don't know that to be true. Any school that he goes to, like for instance, Mississippi State, which is where a lot of people predict he's going to go, they're going to have quarterbacks too. He's not going to be the only one on the roster. So they're going to have competition no matter where he goes. I don't know if that's the case or not, but it's the optics of it anyway. It looks like he wanted to be the only guy. Florida State didn't want to have just a one quarterback class. And this is where we stand now with him decommitted and Florida State looking for another name to add to the list. I mean, if you look at it from Norvell's perspective, whether you think that he was on the hot seat or not, or whether you think he's going to be around in the future or not, as far as he's concerned, he's trying to build a program. He's trying to build for the future. He's obviously trying to build the program like he's going to be around to run it. And so if he feels that they need more than one quarterback, I mean, it's not like we've ever seen that bite Florida State in the butt before, Sam Howell. It is what it is. You can't let one kid hold you hostage. And, you know, an example I made in the article I wrote, and I understand before people try and kill me for this, I understand Florida State is not Alabama. We can't be picky like Alabama. I understand Norvell is not Nick Saban. But when you're building a program, do you think Nick Saban would have let Chris Parson tell him he can't have another quarterback in his class or he's going to decommit? Think about that. I'm sure he probably would have decommitted from there as well. And, I mean, it's just the reality of it. You have to build a program for all aspects. Who's to say you don't bring in a transfer quarterback next year? You just say you have a good transfer land in your lap. Is he going to hit the portal? You can't be sure of that. And not to knock the kid, but if I'm Norvell and you have someone who's been committed for a year and there's all this decisiveness and questioning whether he's going to stay committed or not, I'm not really sure that's who I want to build the future of my program around. Again, he was a talented quarterback that I feel would have performed well at Florida State, but here we are. So at this point, all you can really do is just wish him well wherever he lands and close that chapter and move on. And that's pretty much what we'll do. So with that being said, Chris Parson is out as far as a commitment for the class of 2023. And so now we'll kind of preview where Florida State should go from here. Obviously, with what I just mentioned about Brock Glenn getting all the predictions to come to Florida State, that's where your attention turns first. As far as he is concerned, he's out of Memphis, Tennessee. So obviously there is the connections from when Norvell and multiple members of the staff were at Memphis. They have connections and ties to the area. They know the coaching staff at his school. And so they're familiar with him as a prospect as well. Truthfully, in my eyes, I think Glenn really kind of fits what Norvell wants to do on offense, what he has historically done in his offenses in the past, a little more than Parson does. So this may be, you know, I mean, only time will tell, but you know, this may be a good swap. I think that he is more of a, he's obviously more of a pure pocket passer with probably a little higher upside. So maybe there's just a little development that needs to happen. He comes in, he learns the system. You know, a lot of this depends on if Jordan Travis is going to come back after next year. But as far as Brock Glenn goes, when you have the opportunity to get someone who fits more of what you want to do, I think it's worth the risk to risk Parsons' commitment to take this quarterback into class as well. Now, who the second quarterback is going to be, I'm not sure. There's a few names that have been circulated from the high school ranks. Could be a transfer next year as well. I'm not really sure. So looking at Brock Glenn, he's 6'2", 195 pounds. Per his scouting report, they said that he reads the field and processes the game very well. He has a good release. Obviously, he's more of a pure pocket passer than Parson was. His film looked pretty good. You know, he definitely has got a good arm. He can get it out. He can still run. They said he ran a 4.78 40. That was timed and official. So, I mean, the kid, he can still move. It's not like he's just going to be whoever, J.J. Constantino standing back there or whatever guy. I hope not. But I think he's a good take for them if they can land him. Now, he does have a lot of high-profile offers, namely from Ohio State, LSU, TCU's in there, Auburn. So, I mean, nothing's a lock, especially as we've seen in recruiting recently. Nothing is known. Things change rapidly. So there's going to be a little bit of a battle, but I think the staff feels good about where they're at with him, especially after the last visit. I think they feel they made a good impression on him, and I think they're in a good position. The reason I say that I think that he's a little better fit, obviously Mike Norvell has leaned on Jordan Travis's ability to run the ball to find success, because without Jordan Travis, this program would be just a bit, they might not have won a game last year. But when you go back and you look at Norvell's offenses throughout his coaching history, and I basically used offensive coordinator, the sole offensive coordinator or better, like head coach, etc., where there's no outside influence, he is the man in charge of the offense. And so in his basically career, he has had two quarterbacks that were of more of the mobile type, Taylor Kelly at Arizona State and Jordan Travis now at FSU. Both of those guys have had over 500 yards rushing in multiple seasons. Every other quarterback under Norvell's tutelage, or whatever you want to call it, has not rushed for over 100 yards. However, when you look at the passing stats, Norvell has never had an offensive season with less than 3,000 passing yards and less than 28 touchdowns. Also, when you take into account the other quarterbacks that he's signed, which is Tate Rodemaker and A.J. Duffy. And again, that's not saying these guys can't move, but they're more of a pocket passing, prototypical type pro-style quarterback. When you take all that into account, you kind of see that Norvell is willing and knows how to use the legs to get offensive production, but he's more concerned with having a pure passer. He also has a pretty impressive history with his running back, so they do run the ball well. They just normally rely on the backs to do that. He's also only had one season without, as offensive coordinator again, or head coach, without a 1,000-yard receiver. Now, let me rephrase that. All this is prior to FSU, because neither of those things has he ever had at FSU. So in order for him to get back on track to his career averages, you have to get some high-profile receivers in here, which I feel like they're trying to address that, at least through transfers. The high school recruiting obviously has to pick up, but also to get back to that, those levels of production, you need a pure passing quarterback. And I think that's where they're looking to take Glenn as that kind of passer. And so I also think one thing to acknowledge is, and this is a big thing we're going to get into later, one thing to acknowledge is with the improvement in the offensive line room. Now, I know it may not be coming yet, but you can see in recruiting that the trajectory of where they're going to end up is probably pretty decent. I mean, Alex Atkins has just been killing it on the trail. And I'm going to expand on that in a little bit. But if you have solid offensive line play, you don't necessarily need a dual threat quarterback to kind of hide those deficiencies on the offensive line. If you can block for a pocket passing quarterback and that's what you prefer in your offense, I think they should go for that guy. And it appears that's what Norvell and staff are doing. So hopefully they can land Brock Glenn. I know he said that he's looking to commit sometime before senior season. Some people are saying July. I know high school football usually kicks off early August, so it should be coming soon. So we'll be on the lookout for that. There is no date been announced as of the recording of this podcast. So, I mean, hopefully they land him. I think he would be a good prospect to take in this class. Again, I'm not sure who the second guy is, but obviously they're going to be looking for one, or else we probably wouldn't be where we're at right now with the decommitment of Chris Parson. In other commitment news, Florida State, since our last podcast, picked up three more really, honestly, big-time commitments. I mean, these guys are really legit players that can help bring Florida State back. And so, first up, I'm going to start on defense because we're going to lead into some talking about Alex Atkins and his performance so far. So, on defense, they got a commitment from 2023 four-star defensive end Keldrick Falk. He comes in at 6'5", 240 pounds. He is a 247 composite top 100 player, ninth best D lineman in the 2023 class. He chose Florida State over Clemson, Alabama, and Florida. So you can see that the type of caliber of offers he had, that this guy's legit. He's going to be able to be a difference maker, more than likely a multi-year starter. He still has some development to go. He still has some room to grow. But he does seem to have a nice combo of a good first step, and he has length and athleticism that he uses to win battles. Kind of sounds like a guy we saw last year who was a dominant defensive end for FSU, but we're not going to jump to that conclusion just yet. I think he would make a great combo with already legacy commit Lamont Green Jr. I think those two on the edges would be really nice for Florida State. It's just something that these are the type of battles in recruiting that you have to start winning to get back to the level of play that you want from Florida State. You know, when you can beat out Clemson, Alabama, and I mean Florida, but if you can beat out Florida, also, I mean, it keeps it away from your rival as well, but those are the big name schools that once you start beating out for athletes, I mean, this is a great commitment. And so John Papuchis, underrated recruiter, kind of was the lead on that. He's really made a difference for the defensive end room. And so shout out to Coach JP for that one. Moving over to the offensive line, we got two more big commitments. Florida State has just absolutely been loading the trenches lately. And I love it because I personally feel, obviously, quarterback is the most important position on the roster. But programs, dominant programs, dynasties, etc., are built in the trenches through dominant offensive line play and dominant defensive play. For example, look at Alabama. They won a national championship with, say, Mac Jones at quarterback or Greg McElroy, you know, whatever. So it's not always about having a quarterback like Jameis Winston or someone like that. You got to have a dominant line to be able to give those people time to use the athletes that you have around them. And what Atkins has done has just been unbelievable with this room. I mean, the task that he has that was put in front of him to flip this room is like climbing Mount Everest, because we know the struggles that they've had for a long time. So I'm going to get into that in a second. But first up, let's just cover these commitments. You had Roderick Kearney, four-star offensive line from Orange Park, Florida, 6'4", 300 pounds. He chose Florida State over Arkansas, which to me, I know it's Arkansas, but that's a pretty good school to offer an offensive lineman because you have head coach there, Sam Pittman, who was the offensive line coach at Georgia. And if you know anything about Georgia, their offensive line has been dominant for a long time. So that's a good sign that he has got offered from Sam Pittman. Also, Auburn and Florida were in there. So just stuffing Florida in a locker right now, and I love it. The next commitment was beat out Florida too. He's highly regarded prospect with high potential. Of course, with any offensive lineman coming in, defense too, they're going to need a year or two in the system to develop strength and conditioning wise. just learning the game, catching up to the college speed. And so the next commitment, which was a huge get for Florida State, literally, was four-star blue chip offensive tackle commit, Lucas Simmons. And man, does it feel great to see Florida State land a blue chip, true prototypical offensive tackle. How long has it been? How long have we been putting guards at tackle and asking them to play that position? This is just, I mean, this was a huge get, and I'm ready to see him. He's going to have to develop a little bit. Here's the thing. He moved over from Sweden, and he's now at Clearwater Academy in Florida. So he's only played football for one season. Now, he's already a four-star because of his size and the tools that he possesses. But as he develops, a lot of people think he's going to earn that fifth star this year. A lot of people also think that he has NFL potential. He chose Florida State over Southern California, Tennessee, and once again, Florida. He told 247 Sports that he wants to be there to help bring FSU back. And so this is the type of prospect, again, that you need. This is the level of player that's going to help get FSU back to where they need to be. Obviously, being new to the game of football in general, you may need like a year or two in the college system just to kind of work on his mechanics and to get everything in order as far as getting him up to learning the game, the speed of college and all that stuff. But I mean, this guy, the upside on him, he's 6'7", 300 pounds already. So he's got a tackle body. He's built for that position. And so I'm really excited to see what he can develop into going forward. This is just one of the reasons why I really cheer for this coaching staff to have success. Now, there may be arguably some positions on the staff that I, among others, feel may require some changes coming up, but you really, if nothing else, so they can hang on to Alex Atkins. I don't know how long they're going to do that anyway, because I do feel that he has head coaching in his near future, but just the job that he's done on the recruiting trail to rebuild this offensive line room, it just cannot be understated. So I hope they have the success that they need to remain around so that we can continue to watch what Alex Atkins is doing, because he's going to be, by the time it's said and done, one of the cornerstones of what puts Florida State back on the map by rebuilding the trenches, by getting an offensive line room that we haven't seen around here in a long time. And so with that being said, the next part, the next segment that I want to get into on the podcast is covering an article that I wrote on plantthespear.com. You can read the full breakdown over there. It's called The Atkins Effect. And I just feel like this is his performance so far at FSU, and what he has done has been the bright spot for the last few years, despite not having a whole lot of success. And so I feel that it's definitely worth taking a minute to just recognize what he has done and highlight someone who really excels at their craft and approaches it with passion and just a determination every day like Alex Atkins does. So this is kind of a shout out to him to just kind of show what he has been able to accomplish. Obviously, he just got promoted to offensive coordinator with the departure of Kenny Dillingham, and I think he earned that position. I think that is something that he has shown he deserves. The thing about Atkins is he goes about his recruiting and coaching in kind of a different way, kind of a unique way. He's not the typical kind of, and I mean, I'm not going to say everybody is, but he's not like a used car salesman who just promises you everything to get you in the door, to get you to sign, and then you're in a different world once you get on campus. He promises you a chance. He shows you how he can improve you. He is not scared to highlight the flaws in a player's game, but he also shows them, this is what you need to work on to get to the next level, and this is how I can help you get there. And it's a really open and honest and genuine relationship that he builds with these players and prospects and their families, and it's paid off handsomely for him. And you can see that in the classes that he's been able to sign so far, which is the next thing that we're going to go ahead and just kind of point out here. When you look at ratings for offensive linemen, when I looked at the transfers, they're all pretty much rated the same thing. They all kind of give them 3 stars. They're around the same rating. So I'm just going to look at the ratings currently for high school recruits only as far as the ratings go. But if you look at his class average ratings, they have consistently went up year over year since he's been here. Obviously, 2020 was a tough year to recruit. It was mostly, if not all, virtual. You couldn't really create any relationships. But as he's had time to build those relationships, you can tell by the recruit rankings of the high school recruits that he's brought in, and also just the sheer amount of transfers and stuff that he's been able to land, that, I mean, it's only getting better. So when you look at the 2022 class, it was actually, which, you know, that was the massive class. They brought in a lot of guys. And the 2022 class was the highest rated since 2016. And the current 2023 class, which I know it's only two guys right now, was the highest rated since 2005. Now, I'm going to kind of couch that with 2005 was only one player that signed as an offensive lineman. He was rated high enough to give them the highest class. He only did one fall practice before being released from the team for a violation of team rules. So whether you want to count that or not, I mean, he did enroll. If you don't, it's back to 2001. This would be the highest rated class. And pretty much beyond that, it was inconsistent to find any ranking. So, I mean, really, almost one of the highest rated classes, offensive line classes anyway, in a really long time at Florida State. And that is so promising to see. It's so relieving to see after all the struggles that they have had. Of course, given that the size of the last class, they're probably not going to take as many in this class. But I think now you're going to be looking to really improve the quality. You're going to raise the ceiling versus kind of elevate the floor, which I think is what they're kind of looking at in the 2023 class. And they're still in it. I mean, they're very much in it for DJ Chester, who is also highly rated. And if they land him, I mean, it's still going to be one of the highest rated classes in two decades. So that's, I mean, it's just really good to see. And he's also bringing some size to the equation. All signees that Alex Atkins has had so far are at least 6'3", and they've all been close to 300 pounds, if not more, coming in as a freshman. So you're also getting back to having some just massive offensive linemen that you can just road grade around with. And because when you look at Atkins' history, especially when he was the offensive coordinator at Charlotte, it was only 1 year, but in 2019, when he was offensive coordinator at Charlotte, they led their conference in rushing. And when you look at what he's done since he's been here, there's been a very large increase in the rushing production. So that's another bonus that I think you're getting from him being the new offensive coordinator at Florida State, is I think you're going to see, now of course it's Mike Norvell's offense, and Atkins is still coaching the offensive line, so Norvell's going to go back to calling plays from what we understand. But I think when you're going into game planning with Atkins, you're going to have an offense that's a little more tailored towards what the offensive line can do. And I think that's not only going to help the offense, but it's going to help the linemen look a little better by playing to their strengths versus asking them to do something that they're not exactly built to do. But even as just the sheer number of offensive linemen that they've been able to bring in. So like we said before, Atkins has had three full classes. And so when you compare that to the classes before he got here, three classes before he got here, FSU signed 10 total linemen, 2 4-stars, 8 3-stars, with 2018 being the highest rated of those three classes. And when you really go back and you look at the prospects in 2018, none of those guys made an impact for Florida State. None are still on the roster. None really ever even were starters for Florida State. Of course, we don't know how this class is going to project either, but I have a feeling you got some guys that are actually going to be major contributors for this team. And now when you compare that to the classes that Atkins has signed, he's brought in 14 offensive linemen in his three classes, 4 4-stars, 14 3-stars, which includes 6 transfers, who, I mean, so far have been solid players. Of course, you had Devontae Love Taylor. You still have Dylan Gibbons, who is obviously the leader of this offensive line right now, or at least he appears to be. He was a very solid player, and I think he's going to have a great year coming up this year, too. He did get some preseason All-ACC honors as well. So the amount, the level of transfers that he's been able to bring in has made a big impact as well. Obviously, the bulk of transfers we haven't even got to see yet, so we'll see how that plays out. But, I mean, you still feel like he's at least raised the level of quality depth that Florida State has on the offensive line, which is something they just have not been able, they have not had in the past few years. And it is shown when they've had to play through injuries and whatnot. And when you've had to get into the depth chart, they've struggled. And I think that's something they really address this offseason. And I think it's going to really pay dividends for them going forward, especially when you consider, honestly, I mean, he's put out some good players on the field. He's got some good players, but most of the top level guys that he signed have not even seen the field yet. So, you know, you just look at the trajectory of the room and the improvement that they've been making going forward with the recruits that they've signed. And so for the first time in a long time, you're actually excited about the offensive line room. Of course, they have a lot of improvement to go, but you can see that the trajectory of the path that they're on. And speaking of that, when you transition to the on-field play, first you have to understand, of course, they had to overcome COVID the first season, which was hard to build culture. It was hard to coach through Zoom meetings and all that. We obviously know that. But between battling injuries and depth concerns and everything, Florida State had to roll out 14 different offensive line combinations in 21 games under Atkins. And really, that kills any continuity you're trying to build on the offensive line. And the thing is, offensive line operates as a unit, and so obviously. And so when you don't have continuity or you don't have guys on the same page, it makes everybody look bad. It makes the whole offense look bad. And so when you have no continuity amongst the unit, it makes for a lot harder time. And so you're hoping that with the players they've been able to bring in, not having to play everybody through injury, getting some guys back from injury, maturation of the younger guys that they have in the program, hopefully for once you can get some continuity and consistency along the offensive line, and it'll pay off for them. A few notable achievements by Atkins since he's been here: they've had 10 games with 200 plus rushing yards. Six of those were in 2021. So obviously you can see that things, you know, they were able to run the ball well last year for the most part. And people might say, okay, I'm sure you had Jordan Travis, which helped, obviously, the run game. And of course it did. But when you're comparing it to previous seasons, they also had Cam Akers. And so you don't think the staff would love to have Cam Akers? No disrespect to the running backs we have, but he's a game changer, and he's killing it in the NFL right now. So I think you got to kind of take with a grain of salt. Yes, you had a running quarterback, but you know, you also had a lot of limited pieces around him. Florida State has not had a passing game to be scared of by other teams recently, so they can just about load the box. So considering that, and then being able to have the jump in the running game that we're about to talk about, it is impressive. And obviously, I'm just acknowledging that Jordan Travis did help, you know, with these numbers a little bit. They also had one of the best red zone offenses in the country last year. They scored points on 32 consecutive drives, which is still currently the longest active streak in college football going into 2023. You've also seen some of his linemen start to earn honors again. So like this season, you have Dylan Gibbons, I believe, was second or third team All-ACC. Now granted, that's not like a first team All-American, but the fact that offensive linemen at Florida State are starting to have their name brought up in these type of awards again is a sight that we haven't seen in a long time. And so that's just a nice sight. That means that they are getting better. That means that they are improving. When you look at how the run game has improved under Atkins, like we were talking about, using season averages, because of course you had the 2020 COVID season where they only played 9 games. So just using averages, the yards per game has increased by 63% in the 2 seasons he's been here versus the 2 years prior. In 2018, Florida State averaged 91.1 rush yards per game. And that was, again, that, you know, you're talking about seasons with Cam Akers here. And then in 2019, they averaged 140.7 rushing yards. And then in 2020, they averaged 199.9 rushing yards per game. So that's a huge increase. And then 2021, they averaged 177.8 yards per rushing game, which is still very good. Obviously, 2020, they didn't play Florida or Clemson, so you know, those were a little more dominant defenses that they didn't have to face. And that's just being transparent with everything. Their average tackles for loss per game that are allowed has also decreased under Atkins. In 2018, they gave up 8.58 tackles for loss per game, which was 126 in the country out of 129 teams that year. In 2019, a very, very slight improvement to 8.54 tackles per loss. So then you jump to 2020, Atkins' first year, and you're down to 7.33 tackles for loss per game average. And last year in 2021 was 6.75 tackles for loss per game allowed. So again, they still have a lot of room to improve, but you can see that they're headed that way. And the same goes for the sacks allowed per game, because their average is dropping there too. And of course, while you have a mobile quarterback like Jordan Travis, who will help you avoid a lot of sacks by using his legs, he doesn't have a whole lot of weapons to work with at times. So sometimes he may run around to try and make things happen, and it may cause more sacks. But either way, the play on the field is slowly but surely moving in that right direction. The numbers that you see, the level of players that you have are now starting to move in the right direction. And I feel like year three under Atkins, you're going to see a relatively big jump because you've brought in a lot more players, you have a lot more depth, and you're going to get a full year not only under Atkins, but under strength and conditioning coach Josh Storms. Because obviously, as an offensive lineman, if you can't just physically push somebody out of the way, which is something we saw last year at the center position where you're just kind of getting bull rushed. And of course, that there was some injuries concern there too. But when you can get bigger and stronger and faster as an offensive lineman, naturally, you're going to be better at the position. So that's something that I'm looking for this year, to have a big jump in year three. But really, the whole premise of what I'm trying to get at through the Atkins effect, and I encourage you to go read the article because I probably said it a little more eloquently in the article, is just that I'm thankful to have a guy like Alex Atkins at Florida State who has totally and completely flipped the narrative of the room as far as offensive line is concerned. He's gone about things the right way. He's a good guy. He's a genuine dude. Every time you listen to the interviews, or he's willing to come on people's podcasts, maybe we can even get him on here someday. I would be honored to have a conversation with him. He's the type of guy that you want. And Florida State, for Mike Norvell, it's obviously so far probably been his best hire. And so promoting him to offensive coordinator, I think, was a natural fit. Of course, you want to try and keep him around because there was some rumors of people trying to poach him in the offseason. So I think you lock up a guy like that and who's a real asset to your program, who's an asset to your team and goes about things the right way. And, you know, like I said, for most Florida State fans, myself included, you just really have to be thankful that he landed in Tallahassee. And so, again, go read that article. It gives more details, more of a breakdown. And just, again, shout out to Alex Atkins, who has been a lead on the trail, great on the field. And now we get to see what he's like in year three with some more guys to work with and at the offensive coordinator position. In the next segment, I'll just give my brief thoughts on, obviously, the other hot topic right now is conference realignment. It boiled over when you saw USC and UCLA go to the Big Ten, and now it's kind of calmed down because when you really look at conference realignment, it's not something that happens super fast. Now, again, you have some teams that are going in 24 and 25, which does seem really soon, but their grant of rights is running up a lot faster than the ACC's. Obviously, that is a huge hurdle and a huge roadblock to have guaranteed your TV rights through 2036. I mean, it's just kind of an insane raw deal for the teams in the ACC. I understand they had to do it. They had to do it at the time to get the ACC network to try and elevate the money that they had. But now, hindsight being 2020, it was a raw deal to lock yourself into that for that long. But I think initially when we saw Texas and Oklahoma, you were like, oh, okay, well, that was a shocker. This looks like it's going to happen. And then it kind of went cold for a little bit. Then you hear the USC and UCLA news, and it kind of ignited the conference realignment fire again. Obviously, I think as everybody knows, super conferences are on the way. It's going to eventually end up happening, and that's simply because of the revenue gap. When, like we've talked about before in a previous episode, the SEC and the Big Ten numbers are very similar. They are projected to be making by 2029 $50 million more per program than all the other conferences. And so when you look at the ACC, I want to say off the top of my head, the numbers were around $100 million per program estimated by 2029. And Florida State was going to be around 50 to 55, I believe. And so when you look at that, you're going to have a team like Vanderbilt, Missouri. Well, really, mostly Vanderbilt, but you're going to have teams like that who have never really won anything, making more money than Clemson and Florida State combined, who have 6 national championships. That is absolutely insane. So considering the revenue gap, you're just basically going to see the SEC and the Big Ten poach whoever they want for their conferences. And you can't be mad at the schools for going because if you don't keep up with the financial aspect of this arms race we call college football now, especially with NIL, you're going to get left behind. You're going to get lapped. And if you don't end up in the super conference, then you're going to be like a Group of 5 team is currently. And that's hard to imagine Florida State not getting a seat at the big boy table. I think one thing that helps is it does kind of seem most of the rumors, and again, I don't want to speculate. I don't want to play into the rumor mill because you just don't know what's going to happen, especially with that grant of rights. It has seemed that Florida State, Clemson, maybe North Carolina, Miami or so have all been kind of rumored as like package deals. So I think that does kind of help you look more interesting. Now, obviously, Florida State has to start winning on the field more. They have to keep progressing as a program, getting back to where they need to be, and making your product more attractive. Now, I think the first big step in that is obviously winning on the field. Florida State has to take care of business this upcoming season and going into the future. I think it's important for Norvell to have success because another coaching change puts you even farther behind on that. I think having Michael Alford as AD, having an actual real AD who's willing to make decisions, you know, kind of like a boss like we've seen him do recently, I think that does help. And I think that will help get this program back. And I think that will help ensure that you get a seat at the big boy table. Because, I mean, obviously the ACC is not just going to, well, they might, but obviously the ACC isn't just going to lay there and die. They've rumored to maybe look at expanding into a couple other teams, some different revenue models. Ultimately, Florida State just needs to get out if they really want to compete at a high level of college football again. Their ACC is probably not going to be able to match anytime soon the SEC money or even Big Ten for that matter, especially when you consider the one silver bullet that the ACC kind of felt like they had in Notre Dame joining full-time. Doesn't really seem like Notre Dame's interested. More than likely, if they are to join a conference, and I think if super conferences come about, they're pretty much just going to have to. It's going to be the Big Ten. It's a natural fit. The revenue's there. They're not going to have any interest in joining the ACC and kind of shooting themselves in the foot revenue-wise. When you look at FSU, doing some research, Florida State is still a big name brand. They're still a national brand. They're still recognized across the country. And Florida State is still a top 25 type of TV viewership team, because I went back and found some statistics from 2021 where they ranked in the top 25 of most viewed college football teams. Again, those statistics probably aren't perfect, but it just shows that they are a top 25 brand as far as TV viewers. Obviously, the Notre Dame game was huge. It had over 4 million viewers, which there is a benchmark for TV, apparently, according to the article that I was reading on it. And there was only a handful of games that even got over 4 million views, and Florida State Notre Dame was one of them. And so if you think about the amount of viewers they're getting in the current state of the program, that's still a good sign. Also, when you look at an attendance rankings, I found a site that showed the average five-year basically rankings of teams for five-year average attendance, and Florida State was in the top 20. You have Florida State, who even in a down period is a top 25 TV market team, top 20 attendance team. You got a real AD in place now. Basketball's had a lot of success recently. They're investing in baseball and softball. Not that those are the revenue sports, but you know, they're still making an investment, and that is part of the deal. Obviously, that's why North Carolina is one of the attractive brands out of the ACC, and Duke as well, because you sure aren't taking them for football. So that's something I do think that if they just can keep the trajectory, keep getting more successful, do what they have to do, invest in their program, they'll get a seat at the big boy table. I don't so much worry about that as much as I worry about how long it's going to take to get there, just due to that grant of rights. A lot of teams are looking at models where they can maybe finance the buyout over time because the giant jump in revenue is worth it, to where you may not make as much eventually or initially, but eventually the payoff will come once you get out from under the grant of rights, because you already know if the SEC's got that kind of money coming in, what's going to happen if they added, say, Clemson and Florida State, Texas and Oklahoma. The revenue is going to continue to go up. So I think if you given the opportunity, you have to jump. You have to take the chance if you want to get back to where you want to be. And really on that note, Florida State, imagine what they could do with SEC money. Because Florida State for a long time has done a lot with a lot less financially. And we know that. So imagine if you were to put Florida State on a financial level with the Alabamas and the Georgias of the world. I mean, look out. You already live in one of the most talent-rich states in the country. You're already a national brand. And you give them SEC money. I'd be pretty excited to see what they could do with that. And so that's pretty much where I'm at with conference realignment. Again, I'm not going to really speculate on rumors until we know, because there's been some kind of sketchy like sources putting stuff out saying talks are happening with these teams and that teams. And I just think it's better to wait until you get some more concrete evidence to run with. And just kind of wrapping up with some other news that recently came out. Florida State released that they have sold out their allotment of tickets for the LSU game in New Orleans Labor Day weekend. Their allotment was 30,000 tickets. Of course, you don't know how many of those are going to end up going on the secondary market. You also don't know how many are being bought off the secondary market. Either way, it looks like Florida State's going to have a good crowd in New Orleans for that game in the Superdome. I had read some message boards when I was actually looking for my tickets. I wanted to know which side Florida State was on. And the seating chart map, the only one I could find, was on an LSU message board. And there was two pages of comments basically talking about how Florida State doesn't travel well and they think it's going to be 75-25 or better. And so, you know, hey, put that in your pipe and smoke it, LSU fans. It looks like the war chant will be echoing all throughout the Big Easy that weekend. Hopefully, we have reason to get a little wild afterwards after a nice big victory. It would be a huge statement win for the staff. I'm not quite ready to make my predictions yet. That's something that I am getting ready to kind of work into. The rotation here is just doing the preseason previews and everything like that. But I think Florida State's got a good chance. You've heard a few things coming out of LSU that they haven't really got things figured out yet. Florida State gets a week zero game to prepare. LSU does not. New staff versus already in place staff. It's going to be an exciting game and an even more exciting and fun atmosphere. I'm already looking forward to it. I already got everything booked up, and I hope to see you guys there. One other thing, if you follow us on social media, this was kind of a little fun thing I put out where Greg McElroy, he made a comment about Nick Saban and how since 2008 they've had basically consecutive 10-win seasons since 2008 and how it was one of the most consistent runs, dominant runs in college football history that we've ever seen and how remarkable it is. And I was like, wait a minute. It sounds like Greg needs a little lesson in history. Maybe you haven't heard of the GOAT, Bobby Bowden, because I'm pretty sure my mind serves me correctly, he had 14 straight top four finishes, 14 straight 10-win seasons, two national championships, two Heismans, five national championship game appearances, and zero playoffs to allow room for error during the season. You also played less games per season back then, so really racking up 10-win seasons consecutively when you're only playing 11 and 12 games, that's equally impressive. Now, granted, Saban has more titles, but of course, if you had a playoff back then, and I understand that he hasn't had one every single year he's been at Alabama, but Florida State would have made 14 straight playoffs. And imagine how many national championships they could have had then, or would have had they had a playoff back then. So it was just a fun little exchange. Again, if you follow us on social media, you would have seen it. So go check us out there. Make sure you get in on the conversation. And just kind of see some. We put out a lot of stuff on social media. You know, again, I try to put out as much content as I can for you guys, but I do work full time, you know, just a lot in life in general, owning a house and having to keep up with that. And sometimes it can get hectic and it can get hard to record podcasts all the time. So just go join us on social media and you'll get the most up-to-date content from there as well. And a new series that I'm putting out I'd like to introduce you to is the Seminole Rap. Obviously, this is kind of a wordplay on, you know, the Dynasty Day rap video, which hopefully my articles go a little better than a rap video did, even though it was, you know, okay, it was neither here nor there, but I kind of like it. But this is a way for me to combine the information, the big recent news articles that you guys want to know about, that you guys need to know, and also allow me to kind of do it all-encompassing instead of having to put out a little piece here and a little piece there. When I get the time permitted, I can just sit down and kind of hammer it all out. So be on the lookout for that. Our first edition is already up. It kind of covers a lot of what we talked about today. And the next thing I got coming, I do have a few things left. Obviously, any news that breaks, we'll jump on and try and cover that as it happens. But I'm getting ready to start my preseason previews for everybody that Florida State has coming up on the schedule this year so I can get ready to make my win-loss predictions for the year. Obviously, I mean, it's going to probably fall somewhere between 6-6 and 8-4, somewhere in that area, maybe more. It's just really, for me, I didn't want to do this too early. I know a lot of people like to do it way too early. I kind of wanted to see how roster moves changed out, who transferred, who got transfers in, any finalized coaching changes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All that type of stuff. Kind of give time for the dust to settle before, so you can make a more educated guess. And so the other day when I was at the store, I saw one of the Athlon preseason magazines, you know, real nostalgia back in the day when that's where you got all your information from. And so I said, you know, I'm going to go ahead and just pick one up. And I've been reading through it so far, so it's going to help me with those predictions and previews coming up. It's kind of a fun way to do it, get a little nostalgic on them. And so that's pretty much about it. So just, you know, stay tuned for that. Check out the website. You have, again, like I said, the first edition of Seminole Rap. You also have the Atkins Effect posted up there. I just wrote an article about the Parson decommitment as well as where Florida State's going to go. Maybe a little more in depth on some things. So go check that out. Join us on social media. Once again, thanks for tuning in, everybody. I really appreciate you listening. And we'll catch you on the next episode. Thanks for listening, and go Noles.